This is the Monday Mindset Podcast, where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 62.
And this week it's Daisy's turn to share with us. So Daisy, what do you have to share?
Well, Terry, I am back with the second part of Stephen Ilardi's presentation at the KU College of Liberal Arts and Sciences entitled Therapeutic Lifestyle Change for Depression. And if you remember, he has a book called The Depression Cure. In the first episode, we talked about the ancestral context and how basically our brains haven't really caught up and we're still wired to be back in that hunter-gatherer time. And this mismatch between the modern context and our brain's hardwiring is what sometimes causes us real problems and distress and can result in chronic depression. So I mentioned at the end of the last episode that there were six things that we could learn from our hunter-gatherer ancestors and apply in our modern way of life to really help cope with some of these problems, some of these mismatch problems. And there probably aren't any that are going to surprise you here, but the six are physical activity or exercise, omega-3 fats, sunlight and being outdoors, social connection, healthy sleep, and engaging anti-ruminative activity. So I've got quite a few notes here and I'm going to just try and race through as much as I can, pulling out the most salient points. It's really worth going and watching the presentation because he goes into a lot more detail and cites things like studies that back up his theories. So starting with exercise or physical activity. He makes the room laugh when he says exercise is completely unnatural, which should help you out if you find the thought of exercise often makes you tense up, maybe feel a bit guilty. Oh, I really should be doing this or I should be doing that. Our hunter-gatherer ancestors, of course, engaged in a lot of vigorous activity, 4 or more hours every day, and at the level of current day elite athletes. But we're not designed to exercise. We are designed to be physically active, but in pursuit of a goal. We're often pretty happy to do fairly strenuous activity over a period of time for something that we want. And he cites the example of people walking around somewhere like Disneyland. They've actually measured how far the average person walks, and it's a long way. But you wouldn't think that you're spending the day doing fairly strenuous exercise, would you? No, because it's all about focusing on getting from one ride to another. So why are we wired not to expend energy on an activity unless it's for a purpose? Well, our hunter-gatherer ancestors didn't have surplus energy to waste, basically. The last thing they would ever do after a morning's strenuous hunting would be to say, hey, do you fancy going for a 10K run? They just wouldn't do it, would they? They didn't have the surplus energy, the surplus body fat to do it. Exercise was always for a purpose. So how do we take advantage of this? And do we even want to? Well, as far as the latter goes, he lists lots of reasons why we would want to and the positive outcomes of exercise. It can reduce the risk of depression onset. It can be used to treat depression. It enhances cognitive function. It protects the brain and it has anti-aging effects. And he talks about things like changes to neurochemistry with things like dopamine and serotonin production. He also talks about some interesting studies. I won't go into the details, but briefly, one of them was with two groups of people, one of which was prescribed antidepressants and the other 30 minutes of brisk walking 3 times a week. I think they did this for 6 months, something like that. And at the end of the period of study, the outcomes were about the same. But what was interesting was the longer term effect. And those who had engaged in the exercise found that they continued having that antidepressant benefit a lot longer after they stopped the study than the people who were taking the medication. But so if exercise is unnatural, what can we do to mimic this sense of purpose, our ancestral drive for activity only in pursuit of a goal? Well, we need to find a meaningful goal, and that's going to depend on you and what ignites you, what interests you. So something that you and I both do, walking your dogs, can be as simple as walking to a destination. You know, if you're able, walk to the shops instead of driving to the shops, having somewhere that you're going, a reason for walking. Maybe going out for a walk with a friend, or engaging in a game-like activity, or indeed a game. Maybe you enjoy playing football or netball or tennis, whatever it is. Something that is akin to playing, basically. But the problem is, when you're depressed, you find it especially difficult to initiate that kind of activity. You might know it's something that will help, but actually dragging yourself up and getting yourself to do it is more often than not a lot easier said than done. And clinical depression indeed turns down the activity in the left side of your brain that allows you to initiate things that you want to do. So a depressed brain might have a thought, I really should do that, but you can't make it happen. The part of the brain that translates intentions into activity actually goes dormant in a depressed brain. So you need someone or something in your life to break that inertia. And he talks about how sometimes the best money you can spend is on something like a personal trainer. And he's worked with many people who have found just that. We can go back again to having dogs. Dogs need to be walked. Yes, you might be able to get away with not walking them if you have a garden from time to time, if you feel really bad or for some reason you can't go. But sooner or later, most dogs are going to start really playing you up if you don't take them out for a walk regularly. So they're going to serve that purpose of dragging you outside. And usually, once you're there and you've broken that initial inertia, it's a lot easier to just carry on putting one step in front of the other. And almost always, you come back feeling a lot better than you did before you left. And we have some other episodes talking about exercise. I think it was way back in the beginning, I spoke about a podcast that Kelly McGonigal had been on. And I found her very inspiring, talking about movement and exercise. Now, the second thing is omega-3 fats. Most of our listeners will know, I'm sure, that omega-3 is one of two types of fat that your body can't make, and they're called essential fatty acids, omega-3 and 6. Why essential? Because they have to come from your diet. Your body can't make them. And they are both critical for regulating brain function and inflammation. And they both play important complementary roles. Omega-3 is associated with anti-inflammatory benefits, and omega-6 is pro-inflammatory. And I'm not really going to go into the nutritional side of things, and most people listening will probably know the difference and what kind of foods are rich in omega-3 as opposed to omega-6. But the worst culprits of all are highly processed and refined foods, which of course proliferate in our diet these days. In our ancestral diet, and what is an optimal ratio would have been and is roughly 2-1. That's omega-6 to omega-3. But in a modern US diet, that ratio is more like 20-1. So you can see it's out tenfold, a massive difference. And if omega-6 is pro-inflammatory, that means the average person is eating a diet that is really going to encourage over-inflammation in their bodies. And we spoke last time about different problems that can cause, and some of the really serious diseases that are typical of inflammation running amok, basically. And of course, depression is one of those. He says that the problem really is with the overly refined and processed diets, and that's something we need to move away from. But he does also talk about supplementation and how it can be really beneficial for people suffering from depression. And he says it's no coincidence that rates of depression are higher in countries that have the greatest imbalance in this omega-6, omega-3 ratio. And again, he mentions studies, The upshot of it is, in studies, that it's been found that 1,000 milligrams of EPA, and he talks about the different types of omega-3, ALA, EPA, and DHA, and he says it's the EPA that has the antidepressant qualities to it, but it usually comes in a package with DHA. But he says, if you think this might be something that will help, to start on a dose of 1,000 milligrams a day of EPA with 500 milligrams of DHA. The capsule size might say 1,000 milligrams, but you've got to look at the details of the EPA and the DHA. And he says anything from 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day has really been shown to be quite effective for helping with depression. And he did make a little side note that if you take omega-3 tablets and you're getting the fishy burps, which anyone who's taken the tablets, I think, has probably encountered that from time to time, that's a sign that it's the rancid oil in the tablets and they're not good. You need to change the tablets. One note of caution he did have is that if you're taking blood thinning medication, you need to talk to your doctor before taking omega-3 tablets. And it reminded me actually to try taking the tablets again, because I did try several years ago and I did find some benefit from it. So it reminded me I should look at that again. The third thing on the list is sunlight, bright light exposure. And I know this is something that you're very keen on. And again, he brings up a study. And he says that bright light exposure has the fastest antidepressant response. Using bright light therapy, you can have a response time when trying to treat depression of just 5 to 7 days. And I forget the amount of time that antidepressants take, but I think it's at least a month. And seeing as 1 out of 3 Americans experience symptoms of depression during the darker, grayer months, you can see why light exposure is so important. And outdoor light will always be indoor lighting, even when that indoor lighting is at its brightest. Our ancestors were outside all the time. Our body clock needs light to function well. And we need that time outside to keep our circadian rhythms working well. Light receptors in the eyes give the brain the information that impacts things like dopamine and serotonin production. And most people will feel the impact of this if they're used to long periods of dreary weather. The best time to get this bright light therapy is in the morning. And I know this is something that you talk about often. And you need to get it really for at least 30 minutes a day. And be aware that things like sunglasses or tinted glass in car windows, for example, are going to reduce this. As an interesting aside, he does mention that people who specifically have bipolar depression are better not to get this bright light exposure in the morning, but rather from midday onwards. Natural light, sunlight, is always going to be the best choice. But if that's something you struggle with, particularly maybe because of where you live, he does talk about the benefits of artificial light boxes. And they're pretty cheap these days. If you're looking for one, what you need to focus on is the lux. That's the unit of measurement that's important. And you need a minimum of 10,000 lux to get the benefits. The other thing, of course, that comes from sunshine is vitamin D. Vitamin D isn't actually a vitamin, it's a hormone, because your body makes it. And it really helps lower inflammation. Interestingly, and rather annoyingly, just like many things, we lose efficiency to make it as we get older. So it's really important to make sure that the level of vitamin D in your system is high enough, especially if you experience these long, dark winter months, and to maybe think about supplementation. It's also something, of course, that's come up as a benefit when it comes to COVID. And there have been a few studies that have shown that the impact of COVID, and I think maybe even the chances of getting it, are reduced if you have vitamin D at good levels. Number 4 was social connection, and he forgot to mention it in the talk. He's one of these people, and I sympathize, who rambles on a bit at length, and he clearly didn't have time. There was somebody in the audience who kept pressing him to hurry up, so this was one he missed out. But we've spoken before about the importance of social connection, and obviously having good face-to-face people you can touch and hug, that kind of interaction is really important. But I do think it's important to choose the right people to connect with, because sometimes those connections can end up making you feel worse off rather than better. And of course, as we know, there's valuable social connection to be had online and in things like Facebook groups. It's so important, I think, to find your tribe, and it's so easy to do it now. There are so many groups out there. There's always going to be one that's right for you. And if there isn't, just do what I did and start your own. Number 5 is healthy sleep. And you've already dealt with this in the Michael Bruce episode. But he agreed with Bruce that it's really, really important to keep to a regular schedule when it comes to going to bed and getting up in the mornings. And that to get good quality sleep, you need a tired body and a quiet mind. And he adds a tip to those that you mentioned from the Bruce episode. And we all know about turning off devices, especially the handheld ones that are quite close to our faces with that blue light. But he also says there's great benefit from turning off the overhead lights an hour before bedtime and just relying on much softer table lamps. And ideally just candlelight, but I'm not sure how many of us can practically do that. The 6th and final point is the dangers of rumination. And he has 3 steps that will help stop ruminating. 1 is to notice when you're doing it. 2 is to decide to shift your focus. And 3 is to redirect your attention elsewhere. And how can you do that? Well, you can do it with social interaction, with a shared activity rather than conversation, unless you can guarantee the person you're having that conversation with can distract you away from those ruminating thoughts. So a shared activity is a better way to guarantee that. Engaging solo activity, something that you need to focus on that's going to take you out of yourself. Jigsaws, knitting. Something that takes some focus and concentration, but is also kind of has a soothing, repetitive nature to it. You can write out your thoughts. He actually mentions that you should only do this for up to 10 minutes. Write them down, dump it all down on the page, and then walk away. And lastly, maybe look at changing your context to prime other thoughts. Certain places can trigger rumination. So just moving yourself out of that place into another can be of great benefit. And he comes back to, as he so often does, is back to nature. Nature, he says, is anti-ruminative. When we are in nature, we are inhaling dust-borne, soil-borne bacteria that get into your lungs. And that's not as bad as it sounds. They're a probiotic and they can change the neurochemistry in your brain, increasing activity in circuits that use dopamine, for example. And I can remember reading in the book, he goes into more detail about that, and I found it so interesting. But basically, it's a good thing to be outside. And I can remember, I think, in the book that he puts things together. So it's much better, for example, to go out for a brisk walk outside than to just walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes, say. You're linking some of these things together. So you're adding purpose to what you're doing. You're tying it back into the ancestral environment where you wouldn't have done something like exercise, for example, for no good reason. So there's nothing there that is really earth-shattering or new, and some of it seems quite obvious. But I think it's helpful to have a reminder of some practical things that we can do with something like depression that can be so very debilitating.
The other thing that I really like about it, Daisy, is although, like you said, it's not revolutionary, I think that's what's most important about it, is for us to really be brought back to the idea that we don't need to look for some modern resolution of these things that are created by a lifestyle that isn't natural for us. And so working on these six things that he's highlighted and that you've shared is about really getting back to how our body works more optimally, how to kind of combat our modern lifestyle and how it interferes for us. I think one of the greatest strengths of what you're talking about and what he has written about is it doesn't have to be super complicated. There are lifestyle things we can do that can make a tremendous amount of difference in how our body functions.
Yes, that's a really good point, actually. And I think it's most apparent in the first suggestion, in exercise. I remember that just resonating with me, that just that sort of feelings, those feelings of some shame and guilt and yes, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. Mm-hmm. And actually making it much more basic, much more easy to do, and mm-hmm. going away from the modern trappings of things like, you know, forcing yourself to go to a gym or whatever it is, and just sort of taking that forced nature out of it and making it something that comes along for the ride. Like, you know, going from exciting ride to exciting ride at Disneyland and ending up walking 5 miles to do that, where you don't even realize you're doing it, mm-hmm. is focusing more on the goal, the thing at the end, and the exercise just sort of comes along for the ride. Unless, of course, you actively just like doing the exercise in the first place, but a lot of us don't. I think it's something that a lot of us struggle with, but there are so many benefits to it. But yes, I mean, I get a certain amount of exercise every day just doing things like walking the dogs, but I don't think of it as exercise.
And I think some of the activities that people do to be active combine being active with being social. So years ago, I remember I was living in Ohio at the time, but something that became really popular there was frisbee golf. And again, you don't have to like run a mile to do this or whatever, but you're walking around, you're jogging here and there, you're lifting, bending down, you know, just being active. And again, going back to kind of ancestrally, that's what exercise was. Mm. It was something you just naturally did. And in this example, being active in some of these things also means connecting with other people, having that social outlet. Years ago, I went to a gym. It was somewhat CrossFit, but he referred to it, the trainer referred to it more as functional exercise. Again, kind of going back to a more ancestral way of moving. You know, in the past, you would have had to lift more things. You would have had to walk more. You might have to bend down more. And in our modern lifestyle, we've made it so that we can get by without doing much movement if we want to. Mm. And so just finding ways to move more. I sometimes remind myself, park further away so that I have to walk wherever I'm going, rather than my old habit was to look for the closest spot possible. But recognizing, again, just creating that opportunity for more movement, more functional movement of the body. It doesn't have to be an exercise routine or a workout.
And it can be so easy to combine things together. I think especially when you do things outside and you do things more the way we used to do them. Mm-hmm. So I combine, when I take the dogs for a walk, I often combine some social interaction and getting some exercise and getting that bright sunlight. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm doing a lot of the things that he's talking about all in one nice, neat package. Mm-hmm.
I like the part about sunlight. You know that that's a topic that I like to talk about, and early morning sunlight and then blocking the artificial light mm. at night. So like he said, turning off the overhead lamps. I'm a big believer in wearing blue blocking glasses when you're going to be using any artificial light, especially devices. And as a psychologist, I used to recommend to many of my clients to get a light box. And in the Midwest, in Michigan and Ohio, in the U.S., for a large chunk of the year, most of the days are quite gray.
Mm, same here.
So the rate of seasonal affective disorder was very high in those areas. So doing the light box therapy was really important for a lot of people. And I think there are a lot of products that are sold, light bulbs that do certain things. And I'm not saying that they can't be useful, but true light therapy is, like you said, the 10,000 lux. And you actually have to be close enough to it to have the impact coming into your eyes. You don't stare at it, but you might have the device within, I think it's 18 inches or so from your face.
Yeah, it has to be pretty close actually, doesn't it?
And they used to be a little more expensive and a little more cumbersome, but now they make them. You can practically get it about the size of an iPhone.
Mm.
I used to have one. I could sit, you know, on a chair or on the couch and put it on the arm of the couch, and I could do it while I was watching TV or reading a book or reading a magazine. So you hear some people talk about they get light box or they get some kind of light therapy and they'll sit at their computer with it all day. That's not really how it's intended. And for people who, as you mentioned, have a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, they actually want to be careful about that because it can actually activate some mania to occur, which is not a good thing to experience. So they might just need to do it a little more cautiously, a little less intensely, but it can be such an important part of combating kind of seasonal depression that many of my clients knew in that part of the country from October until the end of March, they had their light box out.
Mm. Yes, and he was saying that even though he was saying that indoor light was never as strong as the light you get from outside, that it still impacts you negatively at the other end of the day. It's bright enough to be telling your brain that it's not quite time to go to bed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, he agreed a lot with Michael Bruce. And he was saying, you know, he was saying the same thing with Michael Bruce about the closeness of the devices. He was saying, you know, it's not the end of the world if you've got the television the other side of the room, you haven't got strong overhead lights. It's not the end of the world if you know, you have some TV before you go to bed, but it's this, the proximity of the blue light devices right near your face. And yes, maybe thinking about turning off the overhead lights.
Which also makes me cringe when I think of the way I see so many handheld devices being used by young children very close to their face. And it just really makes me uncomfortable to see that because of the damage that can be done. So yes, I think being as mindful as about these things as possible, I think is really important. And again, just ways that we can help kind of moderate our modern life to not have the negative impacts on our functionality in our body.
Yes, and I like your point about actually the beauty of it is that they're all very simple things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a lot of them in combination.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daisy, I think for me, that's one of the big takeaways from this episode. And I hope for our listeners to work on preventing and alleviating depressive symptoms by mitigating some of the negative impacts through some of our lifestyle activities nowadays so that we can really be more protective of our mental health while navigating a modern life. So I hope everyone can take some of those tips forward with them in these next few weeks, as in a few months, we'll be heading into that October gray period for many of us.
Yes, I was just commenting, wasn't I, before we started recording that the nights are drawing in already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you have a very good week.
Bye, everybody.
See you next time.